Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Matthew B. James, who is an international trainer, lecturer and educator who's very passionate about teaching and living the path of HUNA. That is the ancient science of consciousness energy healing of the Hawaiian Islands. And he's been a student of HUNA since 1999, so I should think with good reason he considers himself to be an expert on that particular subject. So welcome to the program, Matthew.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
Now, what I would like to do, since I think we all love to know a little bit about the background of people, I understand that you started meditating at the age of five, and no doubt something must have carried on in your life with you to develop the interests you have. So tell us about the background and how you came to start meditating at such a young age.
Well, it started off rather in an innocent way. At the time I was 5 years old, and I would go into my parents' bedroom in the morning, and I saw my father sitting there with these eye masks on and these really bright 70s orange headphones to block out all the noise.
Oh, yeah.
And truly, I wanted to sneak up on him and jump on the edge of the waterbed and make a big wave that would just knock him off the bed.
Yeah.
No matter what I did, I couldn't sneak up on him. And I finally asked my mom, what is he doing there? And she said, he's meditating, and that helps you to focus and go inside and really connect to some very powerful energies inside you. And she was the person that was running the Transcendental Meditation Center in Honolulu at the time. And I begged her to allow me to learn the techniques and the process. And after some persuasion, she did. She let me learn and begin to practice meditating. And when I was 13, actually I began HUNA when I was 13, so that was about 25 or 26 years ago now.
Yeah.
My father began to study with the son of a fairly well-known kahuna that lived in Kona by the name of David Bray Jr., and he passed on a lot of his lineage to my father, and it has been entrusted with my family ever since then, and I now teach it in Kona. I'm actually getting ready to fly over to Kona today to go teach our 38th HUNA workshop over there.
Right. So you've been apparently immersed in spiritual studies and the science of HUNA since that early age. I gather that you had a direction from a lot of teachers over a period of years when you were studying it. Tell us briefly about that period, who influenced you and how you got on.
Well, a lot of the teachers that I met were mainly here in the Hawaiian culture. Obviously, the bulk of what I teach with HUNA comes from the family called the Bray family in Kailua Kona, and they have a 25-generation lineage of HUNA and Ho'omana, which is a system of empowerment and flexibility of the mind, body, spirit. So it was really a focus on psychology. I've studied with individuals like Tony Robbins, Richard Bandler, so more on the psychological side, and a variety of other Hawaiian teachers here in the islands have all influenced what and who I am today, is what I would say. I would give credit to a lot of people. And then my formal education came from, I remember I got up and I started teaching. I actually taught my first HUNA class back in 98, so I had been practicing it for well over a decade, and I taught my first class in 98. And a student said, I was talking about energy, and the student said, prove it to me. Where's the research that proves that this is true? And I really had no answer, because in the Hawaiian culture, you don't question a teacher who carries a 25, 27 generation lineage, because in ancient times, credentials came from who you studied with and your lineage. Credentials in modern times come from research and the title doctor. And that's when I began my journey to go back to school and get a PhD. And so I actually have a PhD in psychology, And my research was to study the Ho'oponopono Hawaiian forgiveness process. And I validated that it does work. So now when students get up and say, prove it to me, I've done the research. So I went the more ancient route first and brought it into the Western thinking.
Right. Now, you've told us that Huna is not a religion, but it's an ancient science that dovetails perfectly with today's quantum physics. Now, that may not be clear. Can you explain that in a way that would be understandable, what the relation is?
Sure. A lot of the ancient teachings had a common theme to it. A lot of the, I'm sure with you having done this show for as long as you have and gotten to talk to so many people, at some point you wake up and you realize that pretty much all of the teachers that teach in the field or realm that I teach in are saying the same thing. We're saying, you know, a lot of the world that you experience is in your mind, and that energy does exist, and that we need to tap into energy, and that we're beings of light.
Yeah.
Some of these really basic concepts that were present on the planet that people accepted. It was a part of the culture here in Hawaii. Well, for a while, science would laugh at that and say, we're not a being of light. We're not a being of energy. We have microscopes. We've looked at the cells, and there's no energy there. Well, it was until recently that science began to actually turn, and I've heard some quantum physicists say that the circle has come all the way back around and reconnected, because quantum physics, with the most accurate measuring devices, found that at the deepest level of the physical structure is raw energy and condensed light. And in actuality, at one of the deepest levels, we are beings of energy and light. So the ancients were not only... I've heard some people say the ancients weren't that far off. I would actually like to rephrase that and say the ancients were right on point, and it took us a few hundred years to catch up to them.
Right. Yes, you're perfectly correct about your comment as to how I find this common thread runs through the subjects that people talk about. Yes, so there is this basis which comes from there, from them being beings of light, I think, and having different levels of awareness or enlightenment. Now, you said Huna is an ancient psychological system that kept the Hawaiian people free of mental disorder for thousands of years until it was banned. Now, what aspect of Huna is it that has that sort of power to keep people free of such problems? And just out of interest, tell us why it was banned.
Well, I think that, and you know, I'm the last person that gets up and starts waving the flag of there's been an injustice here. I think that there's enough people out there that do that, and I do agree that it is our job to make the world a better place for the next generation. So I do know that there's areas that we still can improve on.
Yeah.
But we've obviously been improving. I mean... Someone might actually call in and say, not necessarily in the economy. Well, that's another discussion. I'm talking about in consciousness. We are improving so vastly in our consciousness and connectedness to the planet. And we've come a long way. We still are missing a few key concepts that when the first Westerners came here to the islands, they found a group of people that were almost completely devoid of mental and physiological disease. And it wasn't that they were completely devoid. It's that if something came up in their life, they had tools, techniques, and most importantly, the belief that it was possible to deal with it. They had beliefs that facilitated a holistic or integrative approach to health and healing. And that's truly what we're talking about here. A lot of people look at the ancient times and they say, I want to go back to that. Every spiritual leader that I've met, whether they are Native American, Native Canadian, Native Hawaiian, they say something very similar, and that is that there's no going back. It's about bringing those beliefs that were prevalent forward into now that promote health and well-being for us and for the planet. And that's the idea of Huna. It's what were the beliefs that empowered individuals? Let's adopt those and get rid of the disempowering ones.
Yeah. Is it actually known where it originated from? Because you refer to it as an ancient science.
Well, the lineage that I carry has at least been written up in textbooks here in the islands within the last 100 years or so. But prior to Western influence, there was no written language. So it was an oral tradition. And I've heard anywhere from 750 A.D. to 1250 A.D. as the origins of the lineage that I teach. And so, and that's not even the culture here. I'm talking about just the specific lineage that I teach from.
Yeah.
So that's why we use the term ancient. When you go back, I guess, over 1,000 or close to 1,000 years, that word begins to apply.
Yes. I can't help wondering in my own mind, since I believe that there was a civilization called Atlantis, and Hawaii was reckoned to be one of the outer points, whether it might perhaps be more ancient than one imagines. You know, it may go back thousands of years.
Now, I would agree with that, and there were definitely some chants that were here and some stories that were told. And, you know, every culture has that story of an ancient civilization that had health and healing down to a accurate science that promoted it across the planet. And there are those stories here, and if you've ever heard any of the stories of the lost continent of Mu, they're referring to the peaks being the islands of Hawaii.
Yes, yeah.
And yes, so, one of the things that I say, I always get, when I get up in front of a group, I say the Hawaiian phrase, Aohe pauku ike kohalau, which means that think not that all wisdom is in your school. And that's for me, and that's for the listener, and that's to remind us that anytime I'm sharing huna, I'm just sharing one path, and huna is not about making another path right or wrong. And so if someone came up to me and said, well, in my culture, we practice this, it's not a... We spend so much time in Western thinking arguing over whose path is right.
Yes.
And in ancient times, it was finding the similarities between the paths that empowered the individual. And that's truly one of the essence or the spirit that is taught along with huna, and that is to respect other paths. And so I've heard the myths, I've heard the stories, they're all fabulous, and as soon as you tell one, someone else will go, no, it wasn't Mu, it was Atlantis, or it was Lemur, or it was... And I sit there and go, that's wonderful stories, where are we now? Where are we heading?
Yeah, I think you're actually more correct than I am to relate those stories, where Hawaii is concerned, to the continent of Mu rather than Atlantis. Now, the facts about huna, saying that whatever you think you are more than that, and you say your work is to is to teach us or show us how to understand who we really are, and then demonstrate that balance and power in our lives. Now, that sounds like a tall order to me, but give us some explanation as to what is behind that.
Well, we tend to, and what I'm about to explain comes both from huna and psychology, we tend to lock ourselves in boxes. We tend to compartmentalize ourselves throughout our lives, and even within the span of a day or within the span of an experience. For example, you might walk up to someone on the street and say, who are you? And they might say, I'm a father, or I'm a businesswoman, or I'm a... You know, I'm a teacher. We tend to identify with what we do. And what huna teaches is that when you lock yourself in that box, there are certain beliefs that go along with it that we tend to then relate the rest of our experience to this label, to this limiting experience of reality. And what huna teaches you is that you're so much more than that, that at any given moment, no matter what you think you are, you are more than that, and there are ways to transcend the experience of that box and yet still remain connected to it, because it's our means of communicating in society. So, again, I like to say it's not about shedding Western thinking. It's about how do you begin to realize that it's time to start looking within to empower. We need to, I hear people ask me all the time in my seminars, what do you think about the government doing this, or this business doing that, or this country doing this? And I say, you know, for so many decades and centuries now, we have begun to tell other people, it's your job to fix the problem, it's your job to fix me. In ancient times, there wasn't that belief. People realized that they were responsible at the end of the day. You wake up in the morning, there's you. You go to bed at night, there's you. What that means is that at the end of the day, you don't have anyone to look at to fix you. In fact, there's nothing to be fixed. How do you empower yourself and remain connected to society?
Yes. Well, that is a very good question. I suppose it's visualizing what you want for the future and somehow connecting or providing the energy to make that manifest. Because I understand, I mean, Huna is also, is it not taught on a spiritual level as well as, I suppose you might say, of having its own physical aspects?
Well, actually, what Huna teaches is that there are four aspects to who you are. There are four facets, if you would, that make up who you are. And one of them is the spiritual. And I've had students say, I don't like that word spiritual. Well, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it collective unconscious. You can call it energy. You can call it spirit, higher consciousness, anything. Then there's the mental aspect of who you are, the emotional aspect of who you are, and the physical. And there's a trickle-down effect, as Papa Bray was explaining to my father when he was studying with the Bray family. And that is that we tend to get this spark or flash of inspiration that comes from the spiritual aspect of who we are. That makes a connection to the mental, and that's where our thinking or our thought process takes form, which then connects it down to the emotional, which is where all of the positive and negative emotions that we have about what we're focusing on comes up, which makes the connection down to the physical, which is where we take it and put it into a plan of action.
Yeah.
What we've done over the past 100 years or so, though, is say that there's no connection between these two, that there's no connection between the physical and our thinking, that there's no connection between energy and the world that we live in. And I think we're past that now. In science, we've proven the mind and body are connected. We've proven that your thoughts and emotions do affect the physical. In this economy, we saw over a year and a half ago, experts saying if this fear continues, it will trickle down and become reality. And it did. So we've demonstrated how powerful we are when we think for or move in a direction in our mind. Huna teaches you not only about how these four aspects connect, but how to use that as a path to make sure that you are moving towards what you want rather than away from or actually moving towards what you don't want.
Yes, yes. So this is where you apparently use the phrase of empowering ourselves.
And that was really, I think, the original name of Huna. That's what Papa Bray talked about. He said in ancient times it wouldn't have been called Huna, because Huna means secret or concealed wisdom. And by the very fact that I'm talking to you about it, it's not the right label, because if it was a secret, you and I wouldn't be talking right now, Mike.
No, of course.
So Papa Bray referred to it as ho'omanna, which means to make energy. But more accurately, when you put the word ho'o and mana together, it means to empower. It means to empower yourself and to empower your path.
Right. Now, there are four important aspects, or precepts, that I believe, as you call them, that are the foundation of Huna. Would you like to go through those? I know you've mentioned one or two, but we will be interested in hearing what the four are.
Well, I would absolutely love to. And, you know, I was teaching a Huna workshop over in, I think it was on the East Coast. I was actually close to New York, I think, at the time. And I made a mistake by saying that Huna is actually a really simple thing to learn. I said, it's not like physics. And, of course, as soon as you say that, I had a physicist sitting in my audience, and he came up to me on break, and he said, physics is actually a really simple thing. And I said, you know, I recall doing it in high school, and I would have to disagree. And he said, no. He said, look, physics, you learn four things, and you know about 90 to 95% of how physics works. And the other 5 or 10%, physicists that spend their entire life delving into, because that's the really fringe or out there stuff. Yeah, and I said, that's so amazing. That's exactly what Huna is like. That's exactly what Daddy Bray would refer to. He would say, there's four basic things that the general public needs to know, which empowers you and teaches you about your experience of the universe. That other 5 to 10%, that's left up to the people that dedicate their life to Huna and studying that fringe, that weird element out there. The four basic things are simple. The first one is that the world is a reflection of your thoughts and emotions. That we can agree upon certain things outside of our own mind, and yet the majority of our experience is up in our mind. And a great example is if you've ever woken up in a bad mood, the world looks different in comparison to waking up in a good mood. When you wake up in a good mood, the world looks different. The world can't magically change. You changed, and therefore your projection or perception of the world changed. And it's basic Carl Jung 101, perception is projection. The second one is cause and effect, and that is that the energy that you put out there produces a specific result, and at some level you are responsible for your entire experience, which is an empowering thing. The third one is that between the opposites is a flow of energy, and there's a cycle and rhythm, like day and night, like hot and cold, that you'll move back and forth between these opposites, and you need to learn about the flow rather than being battered around by the flow. And then the fourth one is the one that is taught currently as the law of attraction. And in Huna, you learned the fourth one last, because if not, you get the idea that all you have to do is think happy thoughts and everything will be happy. The problem is that if you don't know those other three first, it kind of is misleading the law of attraction by itself. And I equate it to four posts holding up a roof. To think that the law of attraction is the only one you need to learn would be like saying, I only need one post to hold up a four-cornered roof. You need four. The world has this idea or concept of, you know, four sides, four pillars, four posts. And you need these four to understand the basic foundation of your experience.
Right. What you're really saying, I believe, then, amongst those statements, is a teaching that often appears elsewhere, is that we create our own reality.
That's ultimately what it boils down to. I mean, we really do. That, you know, we Western thinking has taught us that we are a passenger on a flight, then this flight represents our life. And in actuality, we're not a passenger, we're the pilot. And the pilot is responsible for takeoff, for flying, for course corrections, and for landing. And you are ultimately the pilot in your life, and you are responsible to getting from A to Z. And I think sometimes we lose track of that, and we want, you know, someone else to fly our plane. We want the government. We want the president. We want our mom and dad. We want someone else. No, it's your job to make me happy. I've heard so many people say that. There was a woman that came into my workshop in San Diego, and she came in and she said, I'm in a relationship and my husband doesn't make me happy. And I said, he never will. Because that is giving him too much power in your reality. No one has that level of power over you. If I had the power to make someone happy or sad, I said, don't you think I'd be doing something bigger than teaching the seminar? I'd be going into governments. I would be going into prisons. I would be, if I had power over someone's emotion. I said, and she laughed and she said, wait, what are you saying? I said, no one has that level of power over you. At the end of the day, only you can make yourself happy. And if someone is doing a behavior that is opposite of what you want, there are ways to correct that. But as soon as you say, he makes me, you've given away your power. You have given away your mana or energy. you take that back, and you will make yourself happy. And she did. She emailed me within a couple days and said, I had a heart-to-heart with my husband. He changed his behavior, and I'm in charge of my happiness. And I went, that's it. That's Huna right there.
Right, yeah. Very, very good advice, as it turned out. Why do you say that physical manifestation is critical to any spiritual path?
Have you noticed in your years, Mike, that a lot of people, at least a while ago, not as much anymore, but a lot of people, they taught that money's bad, and that if you like money, you must not be spiritual. I've heard people say that. I mean, even in my limited number of years on this planet, I've heard people teach that success or making a living or creating the things that you need in your life, that's the opposite of spirituality.
Yeah.
And what Huna teaches is that life has two paths to it. The path of manifestation and the path of life. And the path of manifestation is learning how to take the energy from the spiritual that I talked about earlier and bring it down into the physical, and to be able to create your money needs and resources, and to be in charge of your health and fitness, taking care of the physical body and the physical world, because the physical is your foundation for moving back to spirit. So in fact, what Huna teaches is if you are unsuccessful, you are like a house without a foundation. You cannot rise high enough to achieve the things that you are meant to achieve in life. And so I teach hundreds, if not thousands, of people, it's okay to be spiritual and successful. It is okay to be healthy and to be successful and spiritual, that they actually go hand in hand and are a part of the whole lesson of life.
Yes, that's very interesting. I think a lot of religions possibly teach or give the impression that God likes you to honor him by living in poverty.
And my answer to that is very simple. Every religious and every spiritual person that I've met that is successful in their religion or spirituality, they are also at least in charge enough of their manifestation so that they are able to create what they need to do the work on their path. Let me give you a tangible example of that.
Yes.
Baba Muktananda, who, an enlightened individual from India, ran the Siddha Yoga Foundation, woke up one day and said, I want to go teach meditation and Indian spirituality in the West. And the Siddha Yoga Foundation, when Baba passed away, I think it was back in the 80s, they had millions of dollars sitting in their bank account. And that he was able to manifest large sums of money to do what he needed to do on his path. What he taught, and what almost every teaching, whether it's religious or spirituality, teaches, is that to become attached to that, to become attached to the physical, earths your energy and prevents you to move in the direction of spirit. Well, I think some people don't know how to teach disattachment or how to teach non-attachment. So rather than dealing with it, they just say the physical is bad, that money's bad. And
yeah.
In fact, what Huna teaches, if everything flows from spirit, if everything flows from or comes from or taps into a source called higher consciousness, then no aspect of it could be bad, that it would all just be an aspect of spirit. And therefore, to call it evil, dirty, or nasty is, again, giving it more power than it actually deserves.
Right. So, what does it mean to become an independent self-transformer? How is that different from other types of human potential teachings?
Well, and I think this goes exactly to what we're talking about here, and that is that, you know, at the end of the day, I think what people want is to be happy. I think people at the end of the day want to be happy in their career. They want to be happy with their health and fitness, happy in their relationship. And a lot of people are looking for a transformation in what they currently have. So they don't like their career. They don't like their relationship, or they don't like their health and fitness, and so they're looking for transformation. The problem is the phrase looking for transformation implies that it's somewhere outside.
Yeah.
And this idea of becoming an independent transformer is exactly what we've been talking about, that at the end of the day, you are responsible for your happiness and that it is possible for you to become happy on your path.
Yes, yeah. Now, something that figures in your teachings, I'm sure that everybody would like to know about, by way of an explanation, is you talk about releasing what you call the black bags.
What Papa Bray taught is that, and I've had some people recently, I don't know why, I've been teaching this for well over a decade, and I've taught in Asia, Europe, and I say North America because I'm including Canada there. I've traveled all around the world. I've used this analogy, and for some reason recently people have been bringing up, why black bags? Why did Papa Bray call a trapped negative emotion a black bag? And the explanation is really quite simple. In life, we're on a path. We're moving towards something, an aim that we have. To move down a path, you need to illuminate the path. You need to light it up so that you see where you're going. What Papa Bray said is that when you hold on to things like fear or anger or sadness or guilt or limiting beliefs about how empowered you are, when you hold on to them and trap them in the neurology, he used the metaphor or the analogy of a black bag. He said you take the energy of the fear, you put it in a black bag and you hold it inside your body. He used the term black because black is the absence of the light, not good or bad. In fact, I tell people, negative emotions are good. They give you feedback. If you walk into a situation and you're afraid, that's a clue. We ignore our gut reactions so much in Western thinking and then regret it later on. Mm-hmm. So a negative emotion in the moment is called feedback. Holding on to fear for a year, 10 years. I've met some people holding on to their fear for 20 years.
Yes.
That brings in the element of a black bag, not good or bad, but it takes away from the light. See, black is the absence of the light, and you can't see your path. I was afraid to go start a workout plan. You know, five years ago, I weighed 70 pounds more than I do right now. And I was afraid to go into the gym. I couldn't see how to do it. That's what's meant by a black bag. And so HUNA teaches you how to release that, how to release the negative emotion so that your path does become illuminated.
Right. Would you like to give us a clue as to how you would do that?
Well, when I do it, and the fastest we've been able to do it in a weekend training is about within an hour and a half or so, I've guided hundreds of people through letting go of anger, sadness, fear, and guilt. So you're talking about 15 to 20 minutes per negative emotion, and that includes explanation. I just had a group of about 50 people in San Diego, and I limit my trainings to 50 people because any more than that, I've taught in front of hundreds and a couple thousand people, it begins to get a little bit too theatrical, if you would. It gets a little bit too much of a show. And so we actually recently began limiting the number of people that can attend our seminars so that there could be a connection and we would be able to go through the release. Now, I know you have listeners that are probably going, come on, I want to know something. Here's a really simple thing that I've been giving advice. I went on, I can't remember if it was called Good Morning San Diego or San Diego at the Bay or something. I was on a TV show and the person interviewing me said, come on, you got to give us something. And I said, okay, here's something really simple. In ancient times in Hawaii, sometimes you needed to unburden these black bags, literally, like you need to vocalize it. In your relationship with the closest person you have, whether it's your partner, your best friend, a family member, begin to practice the concept of Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono is referred to as the forgiveness process. It's also a technique to do what is called in psychology emotional disclosure. And what psychological studies have found is that if you let it out, you reduce your stress. If you hold it in, you bottle it up and you blow up at some point. I know that sounds so simple. There's really simple steps to do to improve your ability to release this stuff. You create a space. With couples, I tell them, avoid doing this in the bedroom. The bedroom is meant for one type of energy. It's not meant for venting. So you find a place in your house, and what you do is you sit down, and one person gets to completely vent with just saying everything they need to say while the other person sits quiet, no response. And then when they're done, the other person gets to say everything they need to say. So you create a space where you are able to fully vent everything with no fear of repercussion. And what it will do is it will reduce your stress. And people that I've taught this to have found very quickly that some of the things that they've been holding on to inside, they made it a lot bigger in their mind than it actually was. That when they would say it, the person would kind of just smile and shrug their shoulders and go, yeah, and?
Right. So that obviously works very well if people can listen to one another without interrupting, but I have a suspicion that perhaps sometimes it develops into arguments.
It can, and that is one of the things that you do need to avoid, you know. We need to begin to realize that when someone else is sharing something, that they're just sharing. We tend to take the comments so in such a personal way. I was checking into a hotel, and I walked up to the counter, and I can't remember, I made some comment about a bell cart, that there was no bell cart somewhere. And the person across the counter all of a sudden just became so offended. And I guess I had just been flying for 12 hours, so maybe I didn't have the best look on my face.
Yeah.
And the person got done talking, and I said, you know, please forgive me. I said, I'm from Hawaii, and what we say is we say, please forgive me. We don't say, I'm sorry, because I'm sorry is a statement of being. It implies no action, no movement. We say, please forgive me. It wasn't my intention to offend you. I said, in fact, it was just my intention to let you know. I'm perfectly fine with my bags. I'm thinking there was a lady outside who had a lot of bags and no one was helping her.
Yeah.
And the person on the other counter went, I'm so sorry for taking it personally. People have been so on edge recently because of the economy. And I said, yeah, I know. It's just we tend to take things, even in our jobs, so personally. Sometimes it's not a personal attack. Sometimes it's just the other person talking. And we need to begin to practice making the space for that to happen.
Yes, yeah. I suppose we can get into the habit of giving ourselves those quiet periods to calm ourselves down through the benefits of yoga. And you tell us that the Hawaiians meditated and harnessed power to live a fulfilling life. What does that actually mean by harnessing power?
Well, what the ancients believed in here in the islands is that the universe had an abundance of energy, an abundance of, the Hawaiian word is mana. Mana is life force energy. It is the same as saying ki or chi or prana. And what the Hawaiians believed was that the universe was just abundant, an infinite amount of this in the universe, and that you could tap into it easily and effortlessly.
Right. You've actually said there are many paths to personal transformation. But the important thing, and I suppose this is pretty obvious, is that you choose a path and then completely immerse yourself in it.
Have you noticed, and this is just a curious question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that there's a lot of people that do what I affectionately call path jumping? They go halfway down one form of spiritual discipline, and then they look over and they see someone else and they go, oh, I like that. And then they jump over to that path and they pursue that for, you know, a week or so.
Yeah.
And then they... it's what I call path jumping. And I think in Western thinking, we, in our mind, believe that we make it halfway down one path and we jump over to another one, that we're automatically halfway down that one. And we're not. When you jump to a new path, you start at zero again.
Yeah.
You start
at
scratch.
Means you never finish, really, what you start, do you?
Right. And that's, I think, a contributing factor to where we are in our economy. We, in Western thinking, and I'm from the U.S. I love where I live. I wouldn't live anywhere else. And I've traveled all around the world, and I love living in Hawaii. And I'm really saying this beyond just the thinking here in America. I'm talking about Western thinking. We start moving down one path, and we do something different. I think statistically, what is it, that only about 30 to 40% of college graduates do anything that they pursue a career that has anything to do with their degree? Over, like, well over half of the people that graduate from college don't do anything with their degree. They do something completely different.
Yes. Amazing.
I mean, that's an example of that. And, you know, in ancient times, you picked a path. You knew what you were going to do. You were right with your path. If you were going to be a farmer, if you were going to be a woodworker, if you were going to be a teacher, if you were going to build boats, you would pick your path and you would devote your life to it. Now, it didn't mean that you ignored other teachings. It meant that if you went and learned something new from someone else, that you would take that knowledge and put it into your path rather than jumping over onto that path.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And see,
yes,
people want to be fulfilled.
Sounds very sensible.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It, to me, it's like, it's Huna's almost common sense, I would say. It's you got to, once you pick a path, you've got to move down it. And you need to finish. You need to, I meet so many people that say, I don't feel fulfilled. And I say, well, how can you feel fulfilled? Fulfillment comes when you have completion of something. And if you've never completed anything, it's no wonder.
Yes, indeed, yes. Now, when you are right with yourself, let's assume someone is as experienced as yourself with the practice of Huna, do you reach a point where you would consider your growth is over?
No, and I learned this lesson from my grandfather. My grandfather, who never did Huna, was a very wise individual. He said life is about learning, that life is an aim. It's not an end. It's an aim. And for some reason, again, I think this comes a lot from the Western type of thinking. People go, well, I'll go take a spiritual training that teaches me to release my emotions, and I'll just take it and do it once, and then I'll be done.
Hmm.
I've had people come up to me, and they've said, you know, in your weekend training, you help people release their major negative emotions. Once I've released it, will I ever have to release it again? And I just look at them and I say, yes. And then they go, well, why am I here? And I go, wait a minute. This is the Western thinking of, I want a magic pill that fixes everything. I want this pill that lets me lose weight while sitting on my couch eating bonbons and watching my favorite TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no quick fix. There's no quick fix except you. You are the quick fix in your life, and it's a quick fix that you have to practice every day. And there's a really easy analogy for this. Thinking that you go meditate once and that you become totally spiritual would be the equivalent of saying, I'm overweight, I'm going to go eat one salad, and then I'll be perfectly healthy again and never have to eat healthy ever again.
Yeah, yeah.
So health is an aim. Health is an aim that you practice with every meal. Huna is an aim that you practice every day.
Right, yeah. You're saying it becomes a way of life.
It does. And, you know, I think it was Aristotle that said we are what we repeatedly do, so excellence is a habit.
Yes. And also it's being said, of course, we are what we eat.
Right. And you know, it makes so much sense to people when you start putting it into terms like food, like health and fitness, where you say, you know, no, you don't just... Now, I got to tell you something, Mike. In our histories, there are individuals that have meditated and spontaneously enlightened. I think they're few and far between, though. Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras said very accurately, spontaneous enlightenment is possible, and for the rest of us, it's a path we work on for multiple lifetimes.
Yeah.
And so I've had students say, but isn't it possible I might enlighten? And I say to every student, of course it is. And if you do, you're going to come up here and teach, because you're the enlightened one, and I'll sit down. But until that moment where one of my students spontaneously enlightens, I say, we're all on the path together. We're working towards a goal of happiness, of fulfillment, whether that's spirit, whether that's career, health and fitness, or relationships. It's something that we're moving towards.
Yes, indeed, yes. What have you got to say about family forgiveness?
I think forgiveness in general, and this was the research that I did for my dissertation, that feelings of unforgiveness, holding on to, and unforgiveness is defined as motivations of avoidance and revenge. You want to get that person back or you want to avoid them.
Yes.
In the field of psychology, unforgiveness, feelings of unforgiveness, have been absolutely shown to decrease your health. It increases stress and it decreases your overall health. And in ancient times here in Hawaii, forgiveness was required. There was not a question. It was required because it was known you only hurt one person by holding on to it, and that's you.
Yes. Yeah, well, that would follow because presumably the other person doesn't actually know how you feel.
Right, and that's the most common thing, you know. But and I say this to people. Now, by the way, the next most common response, because I had to deal with this in my research. Next, the person then says, well, I don't want to forgive them because I don't ever want to be friends with them again. Forgiveness, for some reason, people have equated forgiveness to mean becoming best buddies. In ancient times, forgiveness didn't mean that you discounted your intellect. If someone did you wrong and they ran over your boundaries, and it was very extreme, once you forgave them, you would, in a very positive way, just say, I'm done. We are no longer going to relate. But you would do it in a way that you were just kind of like, okay, bye-bye. It was nice seeing you in this lifetime. We're not going to ever meet again. Not out of anger, not out of fear, not out of guilt or sadness.
Right, yes.
And so forgiveness allows you to lay a boundary and say, we're done, and do it in a very positive way. And so I had to explain that to people because they would say, I don't want to be buddies with this person anymore. I agree.
And I think also once you have sincerely given out that forgiveness, if you should meet that person again, it really clears the decks. And if it so worked out, you probably could create another decent relationship.
And I've seen that. I've seen that over the past decade that I've been teaching this to people. I've had story after story of people going, okay, I've forgiven them. I'm moving forward. They're not going to be in my life anymore. And then they run into them, and I get an email that, you know, I ran into so-and-so. I ran into my ex-husband. I ran into my ex-wife. I ran into the person who cheated on me. And it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. In fact, I'd probably get remarried.
and I actually had one person email me and said, I actually saw them, and I was happy to see them. I didn't want to hang out with them, but it was like, hi, nice to see you.
Yes. Oh, I can believe that. Now, we haven't got to the end of the program yet, and I'd like to give you time to give out your website address and your email address if you invite people to write to you. But finally, tell me what you mean by saying that we are born with the incredible gift of a personal universe within which we can create and have full control of.
How much time do we have left, Mike?
Bad as that, is it? I'll give you about three minutes.
In 3 minutes or less, explain how to completely, you know, enlighten. Yeah. No, in all seriousness, the idea of perception is projection. The idea that the four aspects of HUNA, the perception, projection, cause and effect, cycles and rhythms, the law of attraction, these four major laws, what they all lead to exactly what we've been saying, and that is that at the end of the day, in the universe, you are in charge of your experience of the universe. It's almost as if, metaphorically, it's your little playground. The universe is your sandbox. The world is your experience, and that's a good thing, that you are in charge of that and that you can take hold of that. And it's not about HUNA, it's about you. It's about how do you find something that resonates with you, that will teach you empowering ideas that allow you to fill that void. And that's a common thread that I hear with my students, that before they experienced this, it was as if there was a void in their life that they had been trying to fill with things that never filled it. And fulfillment comes from within. And so you need to find a path that allows you to do that. That's what I would say about it.
Yes. It was the fact that you mentioned about this personal universe within that caught my eye there. Right. Now, your mission, presumably, is to carry on with your workshops. And details of your travels, no doubt, are on your website. Would you like to give the address out?
Absolutely. Our website is very simple. It's HUNA, HUNA.com. At HUNA.com, we have videos of our workshop. I'm about to start the workshop next week. We're a week away from our 38th workshop. We run them twice a year in Kona, and we're on our 38th one. And so we've been over here in the islands for quite some time now teaching this. And HUNA.com has all of our contact information and our schedule, our books, our products, our events, and everything.
Right. Do you invite people to email you if they have any questions or requests for information?
Absolutely. The general email address, which then someone from our office will be able to forward it to the appropriate person, is info, as in information, info, at HUNA.com.
Right, that's straightforward, yes.
Yeah. Try to keep it
that's
simple.
That's wonderful. Is there any final short message you would like to give our listeners?
I think with everything going on in the world today, I think we're beginning to get a clear idea that we need to begin practicing these things that we've been hearing now for the past couple of decades from a lot of teachers, and that is that it's up to you to be in charge of your happiness and your success, and that if we keep relying on others to find the magic pill to fix us, we're going to be waiting forever. It's never going to come.
Yeah.
And so you really need to begin to tap into that yourself and run forward with that.
Take responsibility for your own life, in other words.
There we go.
Yes, thank you. Well, it's been a terrifically interesting program. It's gone by so quickly. Thank you very much for coming on to it. It was wonderful. I've got time now to announce my guest for next week, who will be Chloe Wordsworth, who is into the resonance repatterning system, which apparently is a type of complementary healthcare method related to the muscles of the body and the responses that they give. So that's certainly something very different to what we normally have. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can be with me next week. Thanks to our guest, and God bless you all.